those who are new to practice, there are back jacks in the corner there. They can be a more comfortable way to sit on the floor if you'd like to use one of those during a group discussion. And also a reminder to everyone that the Sunday morning groups are recorded and made available to people who are monthly donors to the organization. So Greta, if you would mind just being back onto your Zavaton, that way I can see everyone. So what shall we look at this morning? Janet.
Okay, so there's two things that I'm going to say. So I'm saying that so I'll wait.
So you'll help me. Okay, I'll say, what about that second one?
So this morning I was out, we had an assignment yesterday to look at what might be our next step in just identifying or not, identifying from
some kind of core piece of suffering.
Yes. So I was walking along and it was like, oh, this brilliant idea dropped in. And I'm thinking, this is a really brilliant idea that life is dropping in. And then came to realize it was a brilliant idea that conditioning dropped in. So the idea was that I'm looking at the if, then, else conditioning pattern that happens. So if I do this, then that will happen, or else it'll be that.
So there's this habitual if I do this, then this will happen, and sort of the whole life is lived in that future orientation.
Yes.
Okay. Hang on one sec. Anna? I think we should try, how were you guys able to hear Janet? I think we're going to need that fan on. Let's try it with it on, and then people put your hands up if you're not able to hear the
okay.
We'll suffocate ourselves in here without that air.
So I wasn't thinking if, but I was like, oh, this is such a great idea. Every time that I take care of myself, I'm going to give myself a gold star. Then, I wasn't thinking if and then, but then, okay.
So that seemed brilliant.
Okay. A gold star every time. Uh-huh. But then I was like, oh, how many gold stars do I need before, because I'm thinking, well, it always depends on if people are doing what I create. You know, so I'm thinking, I'm going to leave people out of the equation. It's just going to be about me, so not about people. So when I get a certain amount of stars, I can take $1,000 out of my bank account. It's like, oh my God, how brilliant is that?
Oh,
and I'm walking along going, this is so awesome. And I'm like, wait a minute. Oh my God, it's the same.
If I get 100 stars, then $1,000.
But it was like couched in, but you can put that $1,000 back in the bank. You can do whatever you want. It's all about you. It's just all about you. And I was just like, I just love having this one specific little thing to work on.
Yeah.
Because just watching it come up, and just, it's amazing.
It is amazing, isn't it? To have that one simple focus that essentially we can see our entire life through. But if we have a lot of different practice projects going on at one time, it's easy for conditioning to confuse us and overwhelm us and kind of distract. But if you've just got that one thing, and that's what you're holding your awareness, then it keeps catching your attention. It keeps catching on to it.
Yes. Yeah. And so then it was, well, what am I going to do? What am I, and I'm, no. The whole point is that I'm just going to watch.
Yes.
And life did come in and give me the image of the escalator. And I know that was from life because it's so true. It's like not an escalator that you go up, but it's a moving escalator that you go so far, like in the airport. Then you get off.
Right.
Then you get on the other one, the next one, and it's linear. And you can just keep going. And so I keep having the image of every time I get in an if, I'm starting the escalator, and then I get off at the then. And then it's like, well, wait a minute, this isn't it. Get off on the end. Get off on the end. Then, and it just keeps going. So a couple things came up about that. It's just to use that escalator visualization in some recordings, like even in the morning, like, good morning, Janet. Your worthiness has already been established.
Yeah, that's where we're starting.
Yeah. Your worthiness has already been established for the day. And, you know, and you don't have to step on the escalator.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, like, it, that's
you're
okay.
Already there.
Yeah.
Now, what do we want to play?
Yes. Mm. And that's what I keep coming back to, is that there's this sense of this soothing exploration here.
A soothing exploration. That's a nice phrase. Mm. Here.
Yeah, soothing exploration here.
Yeah.
And it's got to be here.
Yeah.
So there's going to be, I don't really know what it is, mm-hmm. and that's okay.
Right.
It's occurring to me.
Right.
It's arising.
It's arising. And when it's time for it to be there, it'll be there. And I just had this image of, and when it's time to take $1,000 out of your bank account, you'll take $1,000 out of your bank account. Not if.
Yeah.
But just, there it is. Because it's here, now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh my God. I just relax so much when I'm thinking about it, feeling it, knowing it. Yeah.
Number two.
This is very exciting. So, last week I just turned 64.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And I've been thinking about that Beatles song.
I was just thinking.
I started thinking about that a couple months ago. And so I downloaded the lyrics and I was like, will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? It's so weird. What does that mean?
It's funny, isn't it? I was like, that's just ancient.
I am ancient. Okay, so I was like, what does that mean? That's so strange. And so yesterday, I taught kindergarten for 1,000 years. So I do a lot of my recordings singing because I sang to the kids all the time. So I just sing, make up stuff.
Yeah.
So yesterday I'm like, will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? And then I was like, oh my God, that's conditioning. So I'm singing back to conditioning. No, I don't need you. No, I don't need you. Now that I'm 64. So that's like my little theme song for the year.
No, I don't need you, and no, I'm not feeding you. Now that I'm 64.
I love it, and it's like, oh, now the song makes total sense.
That must be what they really meant.
They're just waiting for me to turn 64.
Exactly. To have that drop in.
Yeah, it's like, perfect, thank you. They wrote it just for me.
Thank you. Yeah.
So this is my new favorite retreat. I think everybody should do this retreat. It's amazing, fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, let's do a commercial for the retreat. It's great.
So we should say, for the permanent record, right, it's the Your Practice.
Oh, yeah, we're going to go, what the heck are you talking about?
Where essentially, you know, there's a schedule, we come together, but each person is bringing whatever they're looking at, their focus to it, and it's just such a pleasure to hear everyone in that process.
Yeah.
It's like we all get to go through the process together and witness everyone's process, because it's all our process.
Exactly. Everybody's working on a piece of my karma.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great.
Thank you very much.
Or karma, since there is no self in others. It's not my karma, it's our karma.
It's our karma.
So I think I have two things too, but we'll see. So, because I want to talk about the same thing, the assignment for mystery. So first, we were looking at a particular process, and for people who know about process mapping, we were process mapping, but basically laying out what a particular process was.
How it works, how we get caught in that same loop.
What we say to ourselves, what happens next, and then how I feel, and then what happens next, all that. And what we were looking at was kind of we're caught from the beginning, because where we start in the process, we're already in conditioning.
Right.
So that, in a sense, you know, that famous thing of, you have to think outside the box.
Right.
You know, we have to get outside the box. But even the thinking outside the box is inside the box.
Right.
You know, so how do you get out of the box?
Yeah.
Because when everything you do is inside the box. And I thought of, for some reason, I thought of that babysitting technique of, well, do you want to go to bed now, or do you want to go to bed in half an hour?
Right, exactly.
Right? So that can then...
Which you say 30 minutes before the bedtime.
Exactly. So, you know, thinking of the babysitter as conditioning, it's like, do you want A, you lose, or do you want B, you lose?
Uh-huh.
right? Because it's framed as a duality, and then how do you get at it? I just thought that was fascinating to just see that.
So let me see if I'm tracking. So essentially, that's what conditioning is doing to us, but it's giving us two bad options.
Right.
Do you want to have this bad choice in life? Or, I mean, you could if you want. You could have this bad choice. It's up to you. You have free choice.
Yeah, you know, there's only two choices, whereas if we step outside of that whole thing, there's an infinite possibility.
Yeah, exactly. So there's so we're mapping this thing that's essentially, we think is a problem,
right.
And we come to this problem, I'm using quote marks in the air,
right.
And not seeing that whatever it is that's making it feel like it's a problem happened way before the problem ever started. So, of course, there's no solution to it within it, because whatever started it happened way back before.
Yeah, isn't it? Einstein said you can't solve the same problem with the mind that created it.
Yeah.
There we go.
So
then we got this assignment. I think it was, oh my God, I just lost it.
To look at a behavior change?
Well, how you can look at behavior change that will help from the identity from reasserting itself,
yeah.
I think was the thing. So mine was, an I that must do. Or I got an eye. So I thought, and also there's a lot of knowing in there and needing to know and all that. So we got the assignment. I'm like, gosh, I don't have a clue. I don't know. I can't do this assignment, right? I can't do this assignment.
But I have to do it.
But I'll just wait till tomorrow. I can't do it. I don't know the answer. I'm supposed to know the answer before I even start.
Right.
So then I go to bed. I always set an intention for when I'm sleeping, but I didn't set it about this. But that's what I set it for, a healing, a particular body thing. So then I had this dream. It was like the perfect dream because I wasn't doing it, and it was. So I'm in this car, and I was getting off, going on a exit on a freeway that was curvy, so then my purse flew out the window. Somehow. And it was, I don't know how this connects, but it was very much like a purse my mother had, a color. Because I mentioned my mother at the beginning of the retreat, so I don't know. Okay. Somehow there's a connection. It flew out the window, and it landed on this, like, thing that was like a factory, and it went on a conveyor belt, and it kind of got, I think it got shredded or something happened, but I was like, oh, so now I'm like on a freeway, I can't get it. And I'm like, oh my God, I lost
my identity.
My cell phone was in there, my driver's license, all my credit cards, everything.
Everything that makes you was in that bag.
Went out the window. And you know how you have that feeling when you're dreaming that you know you're dreaming, but you can't get out of the dream?
Yep.
And so I'm thinking, I'm like reassuring myself, man, this is just a dream.
It's okay. Fine.
But there's a panic. Oh my God, my cell phone. So who do I need to call? Yeah. Now what else was in there? I mean, I'm watching the whole panic go. Okay, now I need an aunt. It's just a dream. This is not real. You don't have to get those credit cards back. They don't exist. Oh, no. Now, what am I going to do? And it was amazing to watch that whole thing because, of course, this is just a dream.
Exactly.
It's not real.
Yeah, those credit cards are illusions.
I mean, it was perfect. And I didn't do it.
Yeah. Amazing. It's an exact replica of what's actually happening in our lives. So there's some deep realization that it's all right, you know, there's nothing wrong here. But that identity, fighting for it, but now what do we have to do now? Who do I have to call? And there has to be a problem here, and I have to fix it.
I know I'm in a dream. I know the purse is completely made up, and yet there's somebody in a panic, totally making lists, trying to figure out how to retrieve all that stuff. But it's not real.
Yeah. So it really speaks to why practice is about directing attention, because then we really do have a choice. Now we have a choice outside of the duality. Instead of the choice to that constant, okay, I gotta get the credit card, I gotta do it, the choice is to put the attention with the realization that it's all made up. There is no problem here.
And there's no doing in that.
And there's no doing in that.
Cool. Pretty good deal.
Very good deal.
That feels related to the koan I was looking at, which is, the koan is, what do I want? And what does that even mean?
What do I want, and what does that even mean?
Yeah. And so it's sort of the flying out the window of everything that we know that triggered this memory of what dropped in this morning, which was that what I'm looking at, that koan could just turn everything on its head. Everything. So what I think what I assumed that question meant, you know, from an ego perspective, on Tuesday, that I thought it meant, was so there's this sort of buffet of everything that life offers. And then there's a me that sort of can want, well, what kind of career do I want? Or what kind of clothes do I want? What kind of life or partner or anything, what haircut do I want?
Right. Yeah. One of this, and I'll have a couple of those.
No, I don't like that after all, but I want to be sort of like
can I trade this one in for that one?
Kind of like the quintessential shopper.
That's a really scary true image.
I think that's what
people talk about when they talk about consuming life.
Yep. Yeah. And so that was and even when it's like, well, I want to give my life to something good, or I want to, you know, it can still be
from the buffet.
Yes, yeah. It can be the right person buffet and the wrong person. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was it. And what has been emerging over this week is that that question, to turn on its head would be. Asked, what do I want? And the answer to, you know, asked to life, and the answer could be, well, I don't know, because I don't have it yet. I got to see what is being offered.
Yeah.
So if I take the time to really get present and see what life is offering me, then that's the only way I can know what I want.
Uh-huh. Because when you're really present, and see what's here.
Yes. So instead of there being a subject and an object, it kind of flips it.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And the other thing that occurred to me, which feels very relevant and precious to an Enneatype 2, is that is the way to receive.
That is the way to receive. Uh-huh. So Enneatype being a sort of personality typing system that is very in line with spirituality, and there are 9 types, and the 2 is the helper, the giver, the how you would describe. I'm not a 2, so I don't want to get into dangerous territory.
Those words work. So one of the biggest insights, epiphanies I had was about maybe 8 or 10 years ago when I realized that my giving channel was really open, but my receiving channel was really closed, and that equation was going to cause my death if I didn't do something about that. And so there for the last decade or so, it's been sort of an ongoing koan. Well, how do you receive? How do you do that? You know? And this feels like it addresses that. What's required is to be present to what is.
Yeah.
And I mean, even that doesn't always translate into receiving. Because I thought that for a long time, that, well, if I'm just present, then I will, but there's a little tiny element that's missing, and it seems to be embedded in that what do I want question.
So if we look at the one process doesn't lead to another, that traditional what do I want in that buffet, like, I want this, I want that, I want that. That's a process of wanting. Uh-huh. That's a process of trying to get. It's not a process of receiving.
Uh-huh.
Right? So that place that you described a minute ago, of just really getting here and seeing what's here, that's potentially a process of receiving.
Yes, that at least gets me to the door, right? And I can at least be here. And then what it feels like I'm seeing this week is that linking it with that question of, and I don't know how or why this is so yet or whatever, but it feels like there's a, if anybody else sees this, I'll say it. It's like dropping in right now is the scripture passage from the Christian, knock and the door will be open. Mm-hmm. Ask and you'll receive. Ask and you'll receive. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. Ask. You got to say, what do I want? You know, ask, and that's the way to receive. But but there is that, that act.
There is an active participation, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's not a sitting back.
Yeah.
Kind of adds to the koan, doesn't it?
It really does. Because what's kind of blowing my mind right now is that just being present and witnessing it all and appreciating and loving it and acknowledging it, being grateful for it, all that isn't even really the all-in-all and be-all. There's another step to really doing it in. That's what's really surprising to me right now, sometimes.
That it feels to you like just being present and grateful and here, that feels to you that there's another step to it after that.
And it's something around that asking that actually opens the channel or that brings it in on a deeper level.
Uh-huh. Maybe that's another one of those places that's fascinating, and you'll get to look at that for us.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
This is being really helpful. So this is just kind of off those last two conversations. This is kind of a continuation on the conversation we had yesterday, which I realize not everybody heard, but I got a little stuck at the end. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I don't know how this will go together, but I'm looking at, so my koan is there is no self and other. And the way that a self is created and maintained feels like most fundamentally is through self-hatred.
Uh-huh. Right.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm just trying to say translate that for, okay. You know, just kind of that sense of, so if I'm constantly, it basically makes me the center of the universe. I'm bad, I'm terrible, but I'm still the center of the universe. Everything has to do with me. What they think about me, how I'm doing, it's all about me.
And I'm a self.
And I'm a self.
I'm a self who is not the right self.
I'm self, who's not the right self, but I'm still self.
Yeah, that's the main
point. That's the main point.
Yeah, that's
because if we really got it, that truly there's nothing wrong, mm-hmm. then we wouldn't need to be a self.
Exactly, and there is no self another. And so there can't be anything wrong if there is no self another.
Right.
Yeah, and that was actually what I was responding to when I raised my hands a minute ago, because in that earlier conversation about there always needs to be something wrong.
Can you guys hear?
A little more. There always needs to be something wrong.
There always needs to be something wrong in order to maintain this identity, this I.
Right. Yeah. And so, I don't know if I can put it into words, but so it feels like the stuck place I get to is the identity that's being maintained is, you know, I'm not the right person, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, in particular, right now, I'm not the right spiritual person doing practicing, which is.
It kind of has to use that content if you're
totally
in a monastery.
Exactly.
There's really nothing else to use.
Right. Yeah. It's just completely predictable.
Yeah.
And so, gosh, I hope I can say something in the ballpark. It's kind of like what you guys were talking about just a moment ago, where it always feels like there's this something else other than me. It's definitely other than me with quotes.
Right. Other than the identity, other than the
separate
self.
That is somehow is doing the work, you might say.
The work of spiritual practice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And it's like it's happening. And I've said this for a long time, it's almost like it's happening against my will, the work that's going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you use my there,
I put big quotes on it, that's the person in the...
So the ego, yeah. Against ego's will.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so there's a tendency to identify with that because that's the karmic habit.
Mm-hmm.
And it is my experience that it feels there is just something, like I talk about it as unconditional love or presence or awareness or of something that is not that, which is causing a movement to happen in life, which is kind and exactly what I need, basically.
So maybe that's what brought you to the monastery. That's what sits you on the cushion several times a day. Mm-hmm. That's what.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the tricky place. Let's see. I think somehow that all gets that feels so to me. Whether it is or not, I don't actually know, but it feels so to me. But it gets twisted by conditioning to mean that I'm not doing it. Like I don't have any responsibility in what's happening, which is part of the self hate.
Okay, that's part of the self-hate, yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
I think so. Let me see if I'm tracking with you. So that does feel so, that life is living us, or that, you know, however you would put that, but that it's not the I that's making you meditate, and the I that it might be. Certainly I tries to get in there to participate in all, you know, to,
right.
You know, whatever, do what it does with all those things. But it feels like there's something larger. But what you feel like is that conditioning takes that over as well, and basically says, you don't take responsibility?
No, you don't have any responsibility.
You don't have any responsibility.
In the good things that are happening.
Oh, okay.
It's like it's...
It has nothing to do with you, and mm-hmm. You're a loser when this good stuff is happening to you anyway.
Yeah, basically. Uh-huh. And I feel like what needs to happen, and this is part I'm just not sure about, but I need to... And it's difficult with all these pronouns, but it's kind of like I need to identify myself with that that is causing the movement.
Yeah.
And but not as I'm doing it.
Right.
That's kind of where I got stuck yesterday.
Right.
Because that's the whole problem.
Yeah.
Is I'm doing it, but in a way, kind of identifying myself with you know, life, you could say, or that which animates, or the compassion that is kind of feels like it's inherent in all things. And in a way, sort of take responsibility for it. It's hard to know what words to use. But
yeah, because, I mean, we say over and over, you know, that's who we authentically are.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, each of us, all of us, mm-hmm. all of it, everything, mm-hmm. is that suchness, that oneness, that goodness, that all that isness, mm-hmm. you know, that is who we are. So, mm-hmm. so yeah, denying... That, well, that's not me doing that. That really does just keep the separate self in place.
I think it really does.
And then it seems like, I don't know if I'm tracking what you're saying, but that having that distance from it would also separate one from being able to really actively practice it.
Yeah, that's what I was seeing too. That's the active passive thing you're talking
about.
I've got a bazillion recordings on the active passive thing because I keep on in as a default ending up in the passive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's because of this.
Yeah.
It's because of this. There's this belief system that's there.
Almost like, well, maybe that will happen today. Maybe that thing will come in and help me, and maybe it won't. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Yeah, kind of. And it feels like if I can move to, it's basically admit. It's not even, you know, it's just because it's to admit that that's who I am authentically, mm-hmm. is completely against the self-hating system. Mm-hmm. So it's. It's challenging in for the evil eye that is in that, mm-hmm. if there's an admission that that's really what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
But if there is, then it feels like then I can move to an active place with it, where because life is active. It's just this crazy belief thing that says that I am not that. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it's like, let me get on board with that. You know, it's like, I mean, it feels like when we read about, hear about, you know, sages and real holy people, that place of like, it's clear that it's not me. You know, it's God, it's life, it's whatever it is. But there's that place of like, please bring me on board. You know, I'll do, you know, send me the information that, so that feels like that active place of not just like, okay, do with me what you will, but like that. And to me, at least in our practice, that the place that we, that is that middle way, is directing attention. Mm-hmm. That feels like the place that we practice with it, is putting, taking our, essentially it's more of a not doing than a doing, taking our attention out of the conversation and just putting it here. And it's what I project onto like what Janet was saying of having that one simple focus is so powerful for that reason. Because it's taking us out of all of that separate self conversation and bringing it just here where we are available to what we are.
Yeah, that's good. Because that's a doing, that's a not doing. Mm-hmm. I think you just said that, which kind of is the, feels like it's part of the answer to the koan. Mm-hmm. And I had that experience this morning too, while we were doing things in the kitchen, because the one thing that is happening all the time, to the best of my ability, is directing the attention.
Yeah.
And, that was that place I got stuck with a bit yesterday. It's without a desired result.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because I want this, pointing this because this is where the map was yesterday.
Uh-huh.
this is directing the attention for an outcome.
Exactly.
But not that. It's just directing attention because directing attention is what we do.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because this has been, I was saying this yesterday, it's been my experience for months now. It's in and out of identification with this thing.
Uh-huh.
But it feels like the one thing is there's a directing the attention without a preference that's kind of in the middle of it.
It's so key.
And it feels like that's what is making everything kind of move around. And
yeah.
The moving around is not a problem outside of this. It's all actually really helpful.
Yeah.
And it feels like practice, actually. And this says the best I'm not doing practice. And so, anyway.
Yeah. It's fun, isn't it? Because we could almost say that directing the attention for the love of that which I am. You know, so that life, God, life, whatever it is. So, because what conditioning wants us to do is exactly what you're describing. I'm going to direct the attention so that I can get something. I mean, it doesn't ever say that, right? Because that would catch our attention. But because I'm going to feel a certain way. I'm not going to be a bad person. I'm going to disidentify and feel all those expansive things that I want to feel. So we're practicing, directing attention for an I, which is we talked about recently at one of our at-home workshops. But just that, I just had that image as you said that, of directing the attention for life. You know, it's life's attention, just that love of life, that incredible gratitude of just all that we're given, every exquisite moment. And that's why I'm directing the attention, simply to give it back to life. It's not for me.
Yeah, that's good. And it's not, with the conditioned way, everything is loaded with meaning, mm-hmm. and it's all loaded with the past, and mm-hmm. supposedly what happened in the past, and the interpretation of that. And that's kind of is what pushes a desired outcome.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is, it doesn't have anything to do with that. It's just, I'm just directing attention because, or for the love of life, or whatever, just because that's what I'm practicing.
Yep.
And that's kind of the end of the story. And then sort of whatever happens is just kind of what happens. And it's just everything is okay. And it takes all the ammunition away from self-hate.
It really does. And then in my experience, what we start to practice with is, wow, life works. Mm-hmm. And it's incredibly joyful. Mm-hmm. And I'm really, really happy. Mm-hmm. And then we have to practice not attaching meaning to that and clinging to that. And that's the incredibly challenging place that comes from that. Because that laser focus of attention just here, 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 never in the conversation, creates tremendous well-being, tremendous sense of okayness.
Yeah, and safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it disconnects the self-hating voice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. June, did I scare you?
Yeah. I'm a very passive immigrant. It often happens when there's a retreat down here that I'm not in this one. It kind of leaks up the hill I live in Ireland, and it just kind of goes that way. And so what I'm making a lot of recordings about something that Sherry said about that. If it shows up in my life, it's for me. It's a really fun thing for me to live with. I'm just seeing that it's very, my karma is to be, it just puts me in the most passive of all places. Mm. I'm just, if it shows up, it's for me, otherwise I'm just going to sit here and read.
Let me know. I mean, I'm available. I'm here on the run or.
I'll put this thing down in a second. It'll show me what you want. So just what I'm seeing in the conversation today is that it, there's a kind of an identification that it takes. If it shows up for my, in my life, it's for me, and narrows it down to just good stuff. Just the stuff that it wants.
Whereas that place is potentially very big, isn't it?
It is potentially much bigger, I think, than, and I have been seeing it. So I'm just getting a lot out of this conversation.
So seeing
this
that,
conversation showed up in my life.
Exactly.
Show me what a narrow focus that teaching has taken on.
So great, isn't it? It's very relaxing to realize that, because we don't ever have to do anything about anything. I mean, again, I can seem passive, but it's not at all. It's this very, again, joyful is the word that shows up, but practice of just really, really being here so we can hear it, so we can receive it. Because, I mean, you could have sat in this room and not actually received that. But you did, you saw that. You saw that you're listening, you're participating, and that drops in and it makes that connection for you. You see, you have an awareness about what might be going on, and just in that very awareness, the whole thing broadens.
So lots of recordings to be made.
I just want to, one thing I'm struck with this morning, it seems like content is so irrelevant.
So irrelevant.
It just feels like, oh my gosh, it's just the same process for all of it. And so that's really fun to see.
Fun and thank goodness.
And thank goodness. Really, talk about making it simple.
Exactly.
You know? And it really, it brings me, because, you know, we've got a lot of karma about getting it right, you know, well, it doesn't really matter. You know, I can really see that this morning. It's just go open the door to something, and that opens the door to the, you know, the whole deal.
Just the process of opening the door.
And so I've been looking at love, and making that the portal through which I approach everything, moment by moment. And I was given encouragement to look at what it is that calls me back to that, when I find myself back in that awareness of love, what it is that had
that has called you back,
called
to
me
that.
Back to that. And so, you know, there's some external things put in place, but I don't know. This morning it just dropped in as just really pretty much what has just been talked about. I think I've always been coming with that directing the attention from the I who wants to get it right. You know, it's been coming from that identity, like, why can't I get it? Why can't I get my attention directed here, you know? And if I just tried harder, you know, I could really do it. And it, you know, and so it all goes into that thing that's bound to not succeed.
Right.
You know?
It's all within the same loop.
All within that same, you know, loop. And so, again, the kitchen this morning was a hot, in many ways.
Not in many ways. I'll bet.
I just, and I had the awareness of
of my attention being brought to love without that identity doing it. And I think it just, you know, I've always liked the machine, I'll call it the machine, that, you know, that
conditioned mind machine,
you know, that just is constantly, I've always just kind of seen that as, you know, it's just been a strong player. And then to see this other energy that's equally as strong, and it's, but, you know, and it was like just rising up and saying, here, here, here. And it wasn't, and I wasn't doing it.
And you weren't what?
And I wasn't doing it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And to just really have an experience of that, really, outside of that whole system for kind of the first time.
Wow.
And seeing how, and really getting a sense, you know, people have talked about how this, you know, being carried or, you know, that's there all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Don't you suspect that's always what brings the attention back to love?
Yeah.
And then what happens is, so that happens, and you can't even say a split second. I mean, like, barely any time passes before ego goes, you know, let's think about love.
Yeah.
But, you know, put the attention on love. Well, I mean, not really. I mean, God, why did you leave to begin with? And
Is that love or is that ego?
Yeah, I don't know if that was really,
really.
Why don't you try harder at that?
Yeah.
So once life, whatever it is that brings the attention back to love, then conditioning's only option at that point is to briefly get on board with that.
Yeah.
Like, as if, you know, we always talk about it, it's like that 1 second behind.
Yeah.
Here, put your attention on love. As if it said that, and now there we're in relationship with it instead of just the
And so I'll just continue to look at this. I mean, and the thing, the passive thing, that has a lot of resonance with me too, you know. And so just exploring that, what that is, it's not being completely passive, because I've tried that for years before finding practice, and I'm sure it was knocking all the time. Sometimes I heard, sometimes I didn't. So there's just something else that's going on. It's not an active doing, but there's something that...
Well, and what you're describing, at least I'm projecting, is quite active. What is bringing the attention back to love? What is that, bringing the attention back to love? What's bringing the attention back to love?
Thank you.
I mean, that's a moment by moment. I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm this here now. It's very, very active.
Yeah, it's real. Thank you. That I needed that clarity. That's not rolled back on your heels.
Yeah.
You know, just seeing, well, you know, let's see what it's really watching. Mm-hmm. And
watching, but in that really very, again, I'm projecting, engaged in something you love.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so it's not like a watching, like you said before, like that doing, like that perfection, like I gotta get this right, I gotta, but it's just that, like,
yeah,
you know, that
I can see why, you know, we're often referred to or talked about the spirit of inquiry. It's that sort of interest,
that curiosity, that openness, that,
it's not the spirit of get it right,
And we're told, you know, that that's gonna be, oh my god. All the time I have to do that, and because it's, you know, it's conditioned twin is that process of trying really hard and trying to get it right and being really vigilant and being watched all the time and criticized and obsessed and
oh my gosh, you know,
you're not doing it right, and that wasn't really love. And you know, how many times today did you really think of it?
And you're never going to be able to see what happens. You know, that's ridiculous. You don't have whatever it takes to see that. You know, just how it goes on and on and on.
And the best part about that koan practice is that the minute we catch on that it slid over into that, then we're just back to, what is it that brings the attention back to love? What is it? And of course, guess what? The attention has been brought back to love.
Yeah. So it was a brilliant assignment and very fun. Fun's the worst.
Aw, sounds fun.
Just
Yeah, much more engaging than, yeah. So.
Thank you.
Well, I too have the experience of the retreat waking up the hill. And so after our discussion on Thursday evening, I had a koan arise for me, which is, what does letting go feel like? And for someone who has a lot of control in their karma, it seemed like a really good thing to sit with. And I loved it. And just for what you were actually just talking about, because I wouldn't say that anything that would, quote, answer that drops in. Mm-hmm. But by coming back to it, my attention is focused.
On letting go.
Letting go and on whatever's here in the moment. Yeah. I mean, it's just a bringing, it's really a bringing back. And, you know, I've had the experience when I've asked it, you know, it occurs to me to ask it, and something will drop in like, something I hadn't thought of, like, oh, I see what time it is. If I change this plan a little bit, then someone else could have the car when they needed it. And, you know, it hadn't, something that I wasn't even thinking about, uh-huh. It hadn't even occurred to me. Uh-huh. But it was something let go enough that life was able to get in. Yeah. And the best time I like it is in the middle of the night when I'm starting into my one of yoga. I'm not going to go back to sleep again. Mm-hmm. And I say, what does letting go look like? I'm sound asleep. Oh, wow. I mean, it's happened like 3 nights in a row.
Wow.
At the time that I usually despair of just, I'm going to be awake now for the rest of the night.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, this morning when I did have to get up, I was so sound asleep I almost couldn't wake up.
Wow.
And it was because an hour before that I'd been laying there and said, oh, what letting go looks like. And I was gone. So
it's very practical application.
It's very, so far, anyway, very practical. But I just, you know, it's it doesn't, the thing I like about it is it doesn't generate something I can hold on to, you know.
Exactly.
I can't now go write down what letting go feels like.
Yeah, exactly.
But it does allow the being to let go.
Yes. Yeah. It provides the experience.
It provides the experience of letting go. And whether or not I can say, oh, it looks like that, and say, well, I just did.
Right, exactly. And I can practice it.
Mm-hmm. And I can practice
over
it.
And over.
Over and over and over again. Because it's a way of, you know, and it usually arises to turn my attention to it when I'm not letting
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah, which again is that beautiful mystery.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, right.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
So yesterday when we were doing the process mapping, I was a little frustrated.
You guys here?
Yes.
Yep.
I was a little frustrated because I felt like there was something I couldn't grasp in what I was seeing. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing I wanted to say about that, I liked the what is letting go look like, because it was such a great reminder of, like, just let go of it, relax, and keep coming back to it, and things will sort themselves out.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really interested in the idea of, in the process map, we're mapping self-hate, right? And kind of the conversation that's going along in that process. And I was interested in this other process that was going along with it. And it didn't occur to me until later that when you asked the question about what behavior can you change to help dissolve the identity? And so I started really looking at the identity as having a vested role in keeping that process in place. Okay. And I have more thought of it as self-hate wanting to keep that there, mm-hmm. and not so much mm-hmm. the identity.
Mm-hmm.
So my identity is the one who works really hard to try to make sure things, to prove worthiness and make sure it's things are done right.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was able to see the process of self-hate going on, I realized that there was this arguing back with self-hate,
mm-hmm.
and that to me felt like it was sort of the last effort of the identity mm-hmm. trying to bring it back,
uh-huh.
so that would never go away as long as there's this engagement between the two. So the identity is sort of indulging the the self-hate and letting it, allowing it to be there. So then that came back to the koan of what is love.
Right.
And like, there's not the argument between the two when there is love there, and then they both relax.
Yeah, and then
and
you releases. What was that?
And then that releases the
and
tension.
And then that releases, yeah. Because I would project what happens in that is you, as the authentic person, no longer have to have your attention on that.
Right.
When there's that argument happening, I mean, that's a perfect description. Arguing against self-hatred, I mean, that is an absolute lock, 10-year lifetime of suffering.
Right.
Because self-hatred has no interest in, you know, ending it, and neither does the identity.
Right, and that's what I was confused by, is that the identity, I was really identifying with the identity. Because
really,
it felt like it was sort of helping me and sticking up for me.
Right. Right.
But
oh, that's so good and subtle to see, isn't it?
So that was really helpful. And then, so I was thinking about behaviors, and so that's a good one when I can see it, to come back to the koan, but I'm wanting to add, I'm also working on recording and listening, so I'm going to make some recordings specific to that. And have some markers in the day.
Yeah. And yeah, that's so good to really remind yourself, okay, here's the process that happens, you know, and this gets said and this gets said, and to remember, you know, it may seem real and it may seem like, you know, it's there's some resolution to be had in that, but keep in mind, no one in that wants resolution. Everyone wants that to continue. So you have the option, should you choose, to step away from it and put your attention in this case on love.
Mm-hmm.
Just let the whole thing, if they want to duke it out, go, you know, they can go and do that, but that you don't need to give your life to it. Penny?
A couple things. One is, I really got Thursday night listening a different relationship, a different understanding of koan. I think I had really, I have always seen it as you ask a question and then life will drop in the answer.
Yeah.
And you sort of wait for life to drop in the answer. And what I was getting was, you ask a question to ask the question. And what you're watching for is what arises every time you ask the question.
Uh-huh.
And that's all.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a whole different
process.
Take on it.
Yeah.
And then the other thing just came up during group, just listening to what people were saying. What I'm seeing for myself is that what jumped out for me was that a page, and I forget which book it is, maybe it's The Key or That Which You Are Seeking, where there are three pages in a row that say, almost no one wants to grow up,
mm-hmm.
almost no one wants to grow up, almost no one wants to grow up. And so what I was seeing for myself is that what I can do, you know, with regard to conditioning, we're in a child-parent relationship, is telling us what to do.
Uh-huh.
And what I was just seeing was that I can just transfer that relationship to practice.
Uh-huh.
You know, that I can have that relationship with life. It's gonna tell me what to do.
Uh-huh.
And that the invitation is to step out of that very passive, childlike place.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
A couple years ago, I had this thing come in from the mentor, out of the blue, that said, it's time to be a partner.
Mm, time to be a partner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so what I was seeing for me in the discussion is that I can fall into that, okay, I'll just wait for life to tell me what to do.
Right.
And
I'm still the child.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that the call is to grow up in the sense of being a partner, to be, mm-hmm. well, partner's the word that comes to
yeah,
mind.
Yeah, it's a good image. Yeah.
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 It's a much more active, grown-up place to be, and it pulls me out of waiting, because we are sort of waiting, but we're waiting in a very active posture.
Yeah, which is what it feels like the koan process is, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're waiting in a very active posture.
And not just waiting for an answer,
right.
But asking the question, and then whatever comes in, I'm there for it. And then I ask the question.
Yeah.
And then I'm there for it.
Yeah. 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 So really shifting that, not just taking the parent-child dynamic and, okay, self-hate's no longer the parent, now practice as the parent, but just letting go of that whole paradigm and moving more into, I'm a partner. I'm a grown-up in this. And that, how much more energizing and exciting and interesting that is to be the grown-up was in that process of just being here, you know, as you say, completely available to whatever the information is, to any guidance that's there, to whatever, but that we're here, you know, we're ready, we're grown up.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, and listening to the conversation and thinking about the behavior that, you know, the questions that the group's been on, what behavior would you choose to change a karmic pattern? Mm-hmm. And the koan, what came up for me, in particularly in talking about what we've been talking about, and I've been kind of thinking about people who seem like they have, people that we know about in history and in people that we admire that seem to have conquered life and lived life fully and happily, and there seems to be not the element of seriousness there. There's like, there's love and there's absolute delight and play. Uh-huh. And being a rather serious head-oriented person for the majority of my life, I was seeing in the conversation of this life that the behavior change for me would be to, and it's happening without me, I'm just seeing that, that's why I'm seeing it actually, that would be to relax into life and enjoy and play more. And the koan would be, well, what would that look like for this person? Not that. And so
so let me see if I'm tracking that. Are you saying that you saw that the insight dropped in because you're kind of already in that process of you didn't say lightening up, but that sense
relaxing and
delighting.
Playing. I don't know exactly playing. It doesn't feel like it resonates, but the relaxation and the enjoyment and the joy. Uh-huh. I never used to relate to joy. People talk about joy and I go, what? Where do you feel joy? I don't think I feel it. What is it? You know, kind of thing. Uh-huh. And so I know that that is happening just from practice. But play, you know, whenever there are kind of experiments where we're supposed to do frolicky kind of things, the serious person in me go, oh, I don't know how to do that, you know. But I know that is totally against, that is totally different than the karmically solid person. And so I just know intuitively that the more I can, you know, like put it as the koan.
Yeah.
What would that look like for this being to play more? Or is something I'm doing already play, but I have an idea of what that's play what is.
Yeah, well, that's like Sequoia's, that's not love. I mean, that's not play.
Because
play is frolicky.
Yeah, exactly. You know, doing somersaults down a grassy hill or something, you know.
So then we can, like, try to get into a serious yoga program so that it can do somersaults.
Yes, exactly. Or go somewhere where there's grass.
Boy, so that does make it really quite a good talk, doesn't it?
Yes.
Because it sounds like it has the potential to push all of conditioning buttons.
Yes, and this whole area has been floating around, but this retreat and this conversation, and the one we had the other night too, I think, has kind of solidified it into something that I can actually see and not just kind of floating around the edges.
Yeah, so just something to keep holding your awareness, you know, whatever that would be. What is play, or where is the play here, or how do I play, or...
Yeah, I know. When the previous sharing person, the previous processor said, I think that a koan, I've always thought a koan is asking a question and getting an answer, and I'm going, well, isn't it? So I like that idea of just saying, what is play? And just keep saying it and not even expect it. I'm going to get an answer.
Exactly. Because you can't, there's no answer to that. Oh, right. Well, it's jump ropes.
Yeah.
For 15 minutes every day.
You've got to go buy a pogo stick. There's got to be one somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And then, I mean, it just kills it, right? Which is the whole point. That's what conditioning is doing.
Yeah.
Is it's trying to just, you know,
put the kibosh on it.
Put the kibosh on it.
Yeah.
But if it's a moment by moment just inquiry, that is play.
And there's a lot of things that can be done that aren't, you wouldn't call play, but they can be done playfully.
Dishes in the kitchen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if it's a big serious thing and all of that.
Oh God, how many more do we have to do?
And that's a place that I think is happening.
You know, it's just such a good point. I mean, basically what you're saying is we're practicing process, and that's true for all of us. I mean, I just think about doing the dishes in the kitchen. You could use any process to practice with.
Mm-hmm.
You could love the dishes.
Mm-hmm.
You could take great care with each dish.
That's,
you could play.
Caring is another thing that, to me, just an inroad to love.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just an absolute inroad to love. Just caring for things.
Yeah.
Being gentle or cleaning them, or just caring about things, and caring about oneself, caring about people, caring about the animals and the water, and it's an inroad to love. At least that's my experience.
So now just putting the lens of play on all of it.
Yes.
Right? So there's your caring for everything, maybe putting on a little music, a little movement.
Oh, that works for me really well. Yeah, I love that. I do that actually quite a lot. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And yet you don't play.
I didn't think of that. Dancing.
It's dancing.
But it's fun. I know it's fun. But I don't think of it as play. Yeah. And it very much is, especially the last few times I've been doing it.
Uh-huh.
I've been doing some very unusual things that I never did before.
So you might be playing a lot more than you realize.
I think it might be so. See, that's really fun to consider.
Thank you all. Thank you.